Today we understand that so much of prostitution is actually sex trafficking, that many of the girls and the guys who are selling their bodies are being forced into this, they're being held in this, and all the money that they receive is going to their pimps and their traffickers, really.
The connections between pornography, prostitution, and the so-called rape culture. That's the feature interview today. Also, some updates on some things ARP has been up to, including a new legal case and a couple of events to raise public awareness about the We Need a Law campaign and the issue of a new law on prostitution. Speaking of that, Ottawa's new bill to regulate prostitution has passed second reading in the Commons. More on that coming up as well.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Supreme Court of Canada getting ready to hear the Carter case. That's a case that originated in BC, where a legal challenge was launched against Canada's law against doctor-assisted suicide. In the first go-around, the law was struck down as unconstitutional. The BC Court of Appeal overturned that ruling, and now the case is headed to the highest court in the land. ARPA's legal counsel, Andre Schutten, has filed an application for status to intervene in the case because, he says, ARPA has a unique perspective on the issue that isn't being put forward by any of the other would-be interveners.
The issue of euthanasia is one that our community feels very, very strongly about, and further is an issue that we've done a lot of public policy work on. And in fact, our executive director wrote his master's thesis on the Sue Rodriguez case, which was the last euthanasia case that was heard by the Supreme Court in 1993. And so we feel that we have a unique moral, religious, and philosophical perspective to bring to the court on this issue, and a perspective that none of the other interveners are representing or bringing forward.
Schutten says there are some fundamentally differing views on the issues raised by the case, starting with the argument from those who want the existing law struck down.
They're arguing that Section 7 of the Charter, which grants a right to life, liberty, and security of the person, that includes a right to die or a right to have someone assist you in dying. We would like to argue that actually those three rights, the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right of security of the person, are intricately woven together. They depend on each other, and they also depend on the right to life being primary or paramount. If we undermine the right to life, then the other two rights, liberty and security of the person, as well as other rights throughout the Charter, Section 15 equality rights, Section 2 religious freedom or freedom of expression rights, and so on, they're all undermined if we undermine the fundamental right to life. And that argument, I don't think, is being made by anyone else.
Of course, applying for status as an intervener before the Supreme Court doesn't necessarily mean that status will be granted. Andre says there's a good chance the application will be turned down because there's a record number of groups applying for the same thing.
We have 23 interveners applying to intervene here, so there is a high likelihood that the court is going to whittle those down to a select few. That being said, I've looked at what we've put together for the court, and these deeper philosophical questions are sometimes questions that intrigue the court. Sometimes the court has said, you know, we don't want to get into metaphysics and philosophy and ethics and morals, and other times they embrace it. So I'm hoping that in this case, whichever judge reads this application, this motion, that they see that and are intrigued by the deeper questions that need to be discussed when we're talking about such a fundamental issue like euthanasia.
No word on when the decision on this will be made. A couple of local ARPA chapters have been busy with summertime activities. The Toronto chapter, for example, recently set up a booth at a community festival in Richmond Hill, promoting the We Need a Law cause.
People were walking by the booth. They were informed about the fact that Canada has no law, that Canada joins China and North Korea in that. What this did was it stopped the crowd as they were walking by, and it gave them time for reflection. We chose not to man this section of the booth. It was amazing just watching the visual as people walked by. You could see a wife elbowing her husband saying, "Hey, look at this." He's reading it and he's understanding it. Now, we were in the booth right beside the display. We only had one negative reaction. That was from a lady that was just a little frustrated. She didn't understand the issues, but once we engaged her, she had a better understanding. She said, we'll have to agree to disagree.
That's Bruce DeBoer. He works with the Toronto ARPA chapter, and he's also ARPA's National Director of Grassroots Involvement. He certainly lives that himself. He and his wife have 8 kids, and he says promoting the pro-life cause has become very much part of their family life.
We've made it organic in our lives as a family. So everywhere we go, we're sharing the We Need a Law and the pro-life movement. So my family has taken this as a mission where we feel that people need to know about this. Because there's a genuine lack of understanding. Everybody thinks that we have a law on the books, and we don't. So as a family, we get out there, all 8 of us children, my wife and I, and we attend town fairs. We go to town events, and we'll hand out info to town events. We have our van all decked out, and We Need a Law campaign. So this attracts a ton of attention, but we don't do it to attract attention to us, but to the cause.
But what about people who don't want to be quite as out there in support of the cause? Bruce says there's still lots of other ways to get the work done.
Well, what I tell people when they say, wow, look at all the work that you're doing. It's great. It's phenomenal. There's no way I could do it. I say, start how we did. You know, we started out by just handing out a few cards. When you're on your Facebook page, why not go and see what's on the ARPA Canada Facebook page and the We Need a Law Facebook page? You know, when you're checking your emails, how hard is it just to send an email to a local MP to make them aware? So for those that like to engage, there's the opportunity. But for those that are more private and don't want to get in the public square, the easy mail is a great way to spread the word. And by doing this, you add excitement to your family life, right? As a family, we set a goal every month. You know, how many people are we going to try to influence this month?
The key, he says, is just to make the activism part of your everyday life. Another ARPA chapter has been busy as well, holding a public march on the last Saturday in May on the streets of downtown Hamilton. The object was to get out the message that the federal government needs to act on the prostitution file. Late last year, of course, the Supreme Court struck down the old prostitution law and gave the government a year to come up with something new.
So we got together with a number of people, planned it out, and we had some signs printed up, and we ended up having about 75 people out to march around the streets of Hamilton and call for the government of Canada to bring out some prostitution legislation to rectify that situation.
That's Colin Postman. He helped to organize the Hamilton march. He says they didn't get a lot of media attention, but they still consider the event a pretty good success.
The media is just one way of getting the message out, and we were able to talk to people on the side of the road. There was a lot of cars driving by on that day. We walked up kind of against traffic on one-way streets, and I think we really got a lot of coverage that way. There was a lot of people who stopped, asked questions, even pulled over on the side of the road and asked what was going on and what was it about. There was a couple of people who told me they had stopped and talked to people who said they were former sex workers as well. So it was really something that, even if it wasn't a huge amount of notice in the media and that sort of thing, we were able to make an impact and people could see the message that way.
The new prostitution bill, by the way, is moving through Parliament quite quickly. It passed second reading on the 16th of this month. Justice Minister Peter McKay was criticized in some quarters for imposing time limits on the debate, but he defended the tight timeline, saying the government's just trying to live within the constraints imposed by the Supreme Court ruling, which said the new law has to be in place by the end of this year. The bill's now off to Parliament's Standing Committee on Justice and Human Rights for a full review. ARPA will be putting together a submission on the bill for that committee. So really, why is a bill like this important? Stay tuned for the feature interview and you'll find out. We'll get to that after this.
The team at ARPA Canada is looking forward to their annual fall tour. Andre Schutten and Mark Panninga are planning to travel through Ontario, Alberta, and southern BC to talk about the direction that Canada is heading when it comes to religious freedom, euthanasia, and the ever-increasing power of the state. If you are interested in helping bring an event to your area, please email me, Nikki, at arpacanada.ca. That is N-I-K-I at arpacanada.ca. And explain why an ARPA event would be successful in your community. The tour will book up fast, so please don't delay.
And we're back. On the line with me is Daniel Gilman. He's a project coordinator with an organization called Porn Fuels Rape. They've got their own website, pornfuelsrape.ca. First of all, Daniel, welcome to the program and good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
I'd like to start out with a little bit of a discussion about the kind of work you're doing in Ottawa. You work for several members of Parliament. You've been doing work lobbying for the prostitution law. Give me a little background about who you are and what you do for the folks who've never heard of you.
I work for a member of Parliament. I've worked on Parliament Hill for a number of years, a few different members of Parliament over the past few years. And in that capacity, I have had the privilege of working on issues concerning child pornography, human trafficking, prostitution, these and other related issues. I also work in off Parliament Hill in a low-income neighborhood where a team of us have moved into this neighborhood to work among the urban poor, to not only work there but to live there. And so not only is the issue of prostitution one which I've been able to fight on an issue-based level in politics, but also I've been able to come alongside people in sex trafficking and in prostitution right in my neighborhood to be a neighbor to them and to help them find freedom.
I'd like to move to the whole concept of, you know, porn fuels rape. It's right in the title of your website, and I'm sure a lot of folks are not going to get that connection. In fact, I'm pretty sure you've run into far more than your share of ridicule over this. How do you respond to those people with some empirical links between, you know, pornography and what's commonly becoming known as the rape culture on university campuses nowadays?
So when we started this ministry, our focus was on how porn fuels rape. But very quickly, we saw that we actually may have misnamed our ministry, Porn Fuels Rape, and we rather should have named it Porn is Rape. Because what we have found as we began studying this issue and giving voice to those who have been trafficked into pornography and prostitution is that so many of the images and the videos that people are watching of pornography are actually images and videos of a crime scene. They're images and videos of a rape taking place. And so in a very real way, the pornography people are consuming is actually the images of rape taking place.
Let's draw some connections, some loose ends together, if you will, between the three issues, and you've already mentioned them, you know, prostitution, porn, and human trafficking. They're all kind of interrelated.
Well, the best way that I can do that at first, I think, would be to tell a story of a real person that was trafficked. And it's unfortunately a very typical story. There was a young woman named Jessica. She was in university, 18 years old, struggling to pay her tuition, and she received an offer to do a naked pornographic shoot. And so she went, drove off an hour to do this shoot. She arrived. They gave her a stiff drink in order to help calm her nerves. She took the drink. It calmed her nerves. She blacked out, and it was actually a rape drug. They, instead of just doing a naked shoot, while she was passed out, they raped her. It was filmed, it was uploaded to the internet as pornography. That was then used as blackmail to help gain control over her, and she was from there prostituted, sold into strip clubs and the like, and trafficked from city to city where her body would be sold to men to have sex with her. She wouldn't keep any of that money. The money would all go to her pimp. So in a very real way, she was a victim of sex trafficking. The whole time that she was being trafficked, many of the sex acts done against her were filmed and uploaded online as pornography. And so what her reality that she was living in was a nightmare of being prostituted to between 10 and 20 men every single night, as well as having her rapes and sexual abuses uploaded to the internet as pornography. Eventually, she was trafficked from the States into Canada, and there a police officer was able to help rescue her from that nightmare of being sex trafficked. And in the years following, as she has fully become free from that world and from all the just the nightmare of those things, she has shared how, although she's now free from the prostitution, although she no longer is being a victim in strip clubs, the pornography is something that she's never fully been able to leave behind her, because that porn is still online and people every day still are viewing it and viewing her rapes. And that is the most horrific part of the whole process of being trafficked.
Society's views have changed a lot on particularly the question of pornography since the 60s, the whole sexual liberation thing. With that has come, you know, the objectification of women and of sex kind of as an end in itself. I'm not hearing a lot of complaint about this kind of stuff from, if you will, the feminist side of the discussion. In fact, there are some feminist organizations that, you know, are in favor of no law on prostitution. It should be decriminalized, legalized, open it up completely. There seems to be an inconsistency there.
Not only do our laws today concerning pornography, but also societal attitudes toward pornography, so much of that comes from the sexual revolution, from the so many feminist voices that have seen sexual liberalization as something that empowers women. Just a few months ago, There was a porn star who went on CNN and a host of other news stations to talk about how she finds pornography liberating and empowering. And all these lines that are used by radical feminists about how sexual liberalization, how a term often used is sex positive, meaning like anything that is consensual is a good thing. All of this is seen as empowering women. And yet all of this has been the biggest joke played against women, in my opinion, in the past 100 years, because what has happened has allowed for a society that's able to objectify and commodify sex and the human body.
Let's talk briefly about the new prostitution bill. It passed second reading in the House earlier this month. How is this approach different, and are you at all optimistic that it's going to have the desired effect?
Mm-hmm. This is different than what we've had in the past, in that this bill is based on examining what has worked in other countries around the world. And so it's a Canadian adaptation of the Nordic model, which is based on one simple concept: targeting the Johns, targeting the pimps. Our new laws are based on the fact that today we understand that so much of prostitution is actually sex trafficking, that many of the girls and the guys who are selling their bodies are being forced into this, they're being held in this, and all the money that they receive is going to their pimps, and they're traffickers, really. And so as a result, this law treats those who are selling their bodies as what they are, which is so often victims, and it is targeting the people who are buying their bodies, the Johns, and the people who are forcing them into this, the pimps.
Daniel, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been Lighthouse News, shining the light of biblical truth on today's current events. Production manager, Mark Penninga. Technical director, Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback, email info@arpacandidate.ca. Be sure to join us again next month for another edition of Lighthouse News.